Well, welcome. It's 6 p.m. and we are going to open up our City Council meeting of Tuesday, February 25th, 2014. Thank you. We'll go ahead with roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Here.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
And the record will reflect that Councilmember Kelly is absent.
Thank you. And I did want to mention we have a special guest here this evening. We are being visited by Flat Stanley from JJ in Mrs. Reynolds' class, second grade at Santa Rosa School. A little bit later, we will all come forward. I think we should have a picture with Flat Stanley since it's a slow night. We'll do that a little bit later, but we're glad, JJ, you could share Flat Stanley with us tonight. Next item is the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We have no presentations. We'll move on to the consent calendar. Any member of the public wishing to pull an item or the council pull an item of things that are considered fairly routine? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Of a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. Our first item tonight, we're waiting for the PowerPoint there, is another great example of the work being done by our police department and is in regards to a recent significant residential burglary investigation. By searching Santa Maria pawn slip records, our detectives were able to locate an expensive ring that had been stolen in a burglary that had been valued at over $100,000. From the pawn slip, the detective identified the person who had pawned the ring, which led to the identification of the burglary suspect. Both parties were arrested, and most of the stolen property was recovered. This was great detective work by Atascadero PD. We're getting used to this. Good job, Gerald and friends.
Yes.
The police department also recently responded to an alarm at the Big Lots store and arrived in time to see a suspect climbing down the ladder in back of the building. Due to the quick work by our patrol team, the suspect was taken with the installation of advanced technology. All of the city's parks are equipped with CalSense irrigation controllers, which allow park staff to monitor water use in real time at the Public Works Courtyard and to adjust water usage as needed. Those are those silver boxes I think somebody explained to me. It described it as an R2-D2 unit. And they asked, what are those R2-D2 units around? Those are the CalSense monitors. The system tracks water use to the gallon, monitors and measures all flows in the system, sends data by radio signal to a central computer, measures actual evaporation rates year-round, and adjusts the irrigation accordingly. The system automatically shuts down the system when it rains, lowers the amount of water applied when humidity is up, and adds water when the temperatures are high or there are dry winds. It also allows water budgets to be set up in order to limit the total water use. The system identifies illegal connections and provides early detection of broken pipes or sprinkler heads. Again, these are all parks here at City Hall and other facilities throughout the city. We also have some other water-saving measures that are employed by the city. We don't irrigate after 10 a.m. We irrigate every other day. We're not installing any new landscaping. We use shutoff nozzles when working on projects. We monitor landscaping during irrigation periods to minimize or eliminate runoff, and we repair all leaks and breaks immediately. The water company has allowed us to maintain our given irrigation schedules due to our monitoring capability, and our public works staff continue to adjust water usage to minimize water use but still keep the turf areas green as directed by council. So again, good job to Russ and all of his group. We were ahead of the game here in the drought, always trying to figure out how to minimize that water reuse, but still keep the grass green for a community, for everybody to enjoy that turf area. City Council, City Manager Office, and Department Head Strategic Planning. As you know, we recently conducted our 2014 Council Strategic Planning meeting, where the council members determine the issues that are important to you as a council, received a lot of good information about the organization, discussed the council as a team, and did other things. This week, department heads are going to do a very similar process. We will be meeting this week to discuss how each individual department and how the city as a whole can better implement the goals and priorities that you guys had set as part of those meetings and some of the direction that you gave us. So we'll go, we'll meet, we'll come back with plans and items for the council to hear before the whole community. And then last but not least, there's a lot of good news and a lot of good things going on in town. Spring Hill Suites is on schedule to open their doors in December of this year. There's a lot of activity and excitement now that the sticks are out of the ground and the progress can be seen from the highway. It's pretty cool as you drive by seeing that go up. Scotty's Barbecue has moved into the former location of Macy's Deli on El Camino Real, and from all accounts is doing quite well there. We're happy to have them here in town. Bristol's Hard Cider is coming to town. They currently have a successful location in Paso and are expanding into Atascadero as well. Their use permit has been approved and their building permits are in progress. They will be located in the business complex in the north end of town at 3220 El Camino Real. And Pacific Coast RV has moved in the lot between El Camino Real and the highway where Macy's mobile home lot was formerly located. They are on track and getting ready to open to the public. And the new Visit Atascadero promotional video titled The Heart of the Central Coast was posted on the Visit Atascadero website, Facebook page, and on YouTube as of last Friday. The Facebook post has had nearly 5,000 views within the first 48 hours. So a lot of good things going on. Check them out. We appreciate it. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council questions. Thank you for that report. Next item on our agenda is community forum, an opportunity for any member of the public to speak on any topic not on the agenda. Welcome. Please come forward. Welcome, Pastor Shively.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and staff. I'm here representing the Ministerial Association here in Atascadero, and I'd just like to say a prayer and invite anyone who would like to join me to do so. Heavenly Father, we just praise your name. We thank you for this day you've given to us, all the many blessings that we have, God, the provisions, Lord, that you have provided us with, God. Lord, we do thank you that you have sustained us in a season of drought, and we thank you for the rain that is in the forecast. And pray, Lord, that we could be good stewards with all the things you have given us charge of here in this place. We thank you for the council, Lord, and for their hard work and the staff here. And we pray your blessing on them, that you would give them wisdom and governing over the affairs here in our community. And the process in doing that, God, could be clear and peaceable. And Lord, would be just a joy from you, God, in this place that we're living in. Also, Lord, we thank you for your goodness to us, even as we approach Easter here soon. We thank you, Lord, for your death and resurrection, by which anyone who would call on your name would have everlasting life. And I thank you for that tonight, God, for the forgiveness that you've given to me, Lord, and that you extend to any and all. And so bless the rest of this evening, and have your hand on all the affairs here, and just ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Seeing no one approach, we will close the community forum, though I do want to take this opportunity to once again introduce Flat Stanley. And if just for our member of Atascadero News, it is Flat Stanley from JJ. JJ at Miss Reynolds' second grade class at Santa Rosa School. If I could have our council members join me here, we'll just take a quick picture of Flat Stanley's visit to the council. Did you grab a hand? Yeah, you can have a foot. Okay.
You want to break for Stanley?
Yeah, thank you. And if he doesn't make it to Atascadero News, mail me a photo so we can get it over to Santa Rosa School. Thank you.
Don't we get to hear about Flat Stanley and what he means?
Well, Flat Stanley, you know, I'm wondering if Mr. Sturtevant, you've had some experience with Flat Stanley. You want to give a little background on... It's been a little while. Well, I do have a letter. Why don't you read that over? And while you're looking through that, let me tell you a few things about our Flat Stanley. Flat Stanley loves going to the beach and playing games. He takes a nap at 6 o'clock p.m. Please give him a milk and a teddy bear to sleep with. Pizza and cupcakes are his favorite food, according to JJ. So, thank you. You want to give us a little background on Flat Stanley there?
Well, it says here there's a book called Flat Stanley by Jeff Brown, and they've been reading it to the second grade class. So in the book, Stanley wakes up one morning to find out that his bulletin board has fallen on him, but he's not hurt, but he is flat. So throughout the book, we learn all about the adventures of Flat Stanley that he takes on while he is in this, while he's flat. So I honestly don't remember my daughters doing this, so I have to, admit it's been a while. So Flat Stanley's been flown like a kite. He helps police capture thieves. So, Gerald, you might be able to use Flat Stanley someday to maybe help us out here. And then Flat Stanley's parents decided to mail him an envelope to California because it's cheap and the convenient way and convenient since he's already flat. So, anyway, Flat Stanley has a lot of adventures, it sounds like. So, and the city council here at Atascadero is just another one of his adventures. So.
Just another adventure. Flat Stanley has gone all over the world for second graders all over our country, and we're happy to have him visit any time. One other public comment I'd like to mention. Of course, we have our Atascadero Dancing with the Stars coming up once again, and our own police chief, Gerald Haley, is going to be dancing. I don't know if there's anybody else dancing or not, but... Chief Haley is going to be dancing. Anybody else going to be dancing? Oh, Councilwoman Moreno will be dancing as well. So you can check in with Friends of the Library and vote for them, I'm sure, right down at the library if you'd like. Please make a comment.
Also, tickets for the dress rehearsal are available for Friday night for $20. I know they are selling them at K. John's, or you could check in at the library as well. But the event is sold out, but... dress rehearsal is still available.
Thank you. Well, we'll move on with our agenda. We did have a fairly light agenda, so we could entertain a little more this evening. Thank you for your indulgence. Our next item is the management report, and we have our city engineer, Russ Thompson, will be giving that.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Let me get this PowerPoint queued up.
Luke, are you doing that?
Okay, thank you, Mayor and Council. This is coming back to you. This is an item that we discussed at the January 28th meeting, where the same item was before the Council, and we did kind of an overview of a full overview of the groundwater basin and asking whether the Council supported, you know, the formation of that basin. So tonight, we're bringing back to you a draft resolution that. Formalizes the support that you expressed at your last meeting, and the staff recommendation tonight is that Council approve the draft resolution stating that the City of Atascadero opposes the inclusion of properties overlying the Atascadero sub-basin from the boundaries of a regulatory water district for the Paso Robles groundwater basin. So as far as community impacts, and some of this is, again, is review from our last meeting, but obviously, depletion of groundwater resources affects everyone, and there's over the past many years, there's been several studies done and documentation of declining groundwater levels, primarily east of Paso Robles, out towards the golf courses and the vineyards out there, and those studies also looked at what's considered the Atascadero sub-basin of the greater Paso Robles basin. And so that sub-basin was shown to not be in the same level of decline, and actually in many parts of it groundwater levels, as John Neal from the Water Company expressed, have actually risen in that same time period when those studies were done, where other levels east of Paso Robles primarily were declining fairly rapidly. So it affects all water customers, potentially new development. So water is certainly a key element of Atascadero's future, and it's vitally important to us. And we also reviewed that the city of Atascadero and the Water Company have been good stewards of that groundwater resource in the Salinas River and Nacimiento Water, invoking many conservation measures, a lot of management strategies that help the health of the groundwater basin, diverse supplies, you know, by participating in the Nacimiento project, you know, adds depth to the water resource. And then certainly the city has many ordinances that encourage drought-tolerant landscaping and minimizing water use. So as I said, at the January 28th meeting, you reviewed the California Water District formation. And it includes the Atascadero groundwater basin. And your recommendation was fairly neutral on the formation of that groundwater basin. What I think staff took was an expression from the council that's for the people that overlie that groundwater basin, and you want to just stay neutral because we didn't really have a dog in that fight, so to speak.
Let's be really clear. Sure. We don't get to vote on whether there's a groundwater basin. There is a groundwater basin, but yes. The organization that's proposed how to manage that basin is...
A water district, a California water district, which is an entity that its sole purpose is to help manage a groundwater resource. And there's rules of what they can do and can't do. And it would be formed. It would have to go through a formal process. It's formed going through LAFCO. And it has to have, you know, support from the property owners. And it eventually goes to a vote to see if the public wants to form that groundwater basin. So all of the work to date has been interested parties that mainly two groups that are the advocates for this groundwater district or water district, and that is PRAGS. It's an agricultural group. And Pro Water Equity, which is made up of largely rural property owners. And so they have gone together, and I should mention that we have met with representatives of that group, Merrill Malley, city manager, myself. I think it was Warren, you weren't there, but and Roberta, Councilwoman Fonzie was there. So we met with representatives of PRAGS and Pro Water Equity to just hear them out. They wanted to kind of tell us what was behind their application, what their intent was. And then at that meeting, there was, you know, we expressed that we were concerned about the inclusion of the Atascadero subbasin within the boundaries of their proposed water district. And that would allow them to potentially use the subbasin as a water resource for other areas of the groundwater basin. And let me skip to so here's the groundwater basin. So this area in tan is the overall Paso Robles groundwater basin. And the area is surrounded by the thick black line. That is the Atascadero subbasin, which is primarily the Salinas River, the underflow of the Salinas River, and the deeper aquifers below that groundwater formation. And it's separated on the east side of that black outlined area is what's considered or called the Rinconada Fault. And so that fault creates a barrier between the Atascadero subbasin and all that Salinas River water aquifer and the greater Paso Robles groundwater formation to the east of it. And so it's distinctly separate. It has not shown the same groundwater level decreases as the other district or the other portion of the groundwater basin. And so that's why we want to keep it separate. And Atascadero and Templeton and one of the Paso Robles southern wells in the Salinas River are in that sub-basin, but it is uniquely separated, like there's a big curtain between the Atascadero sub-basin and the Paso Robles groundwater basin. That's kind of an enlarged picture. That black dashed line would represent the Rinconada Fault. So since our last meeting, and again, Prague's district boundary originally included the sub-basin. They met with the water company, and the water company in no uncertain terms told them that they did not agree with the inclusion of the sub-basin. That's the same opinion that the council concluded also. And so the Prague's and Pro Water Equity Group have worked with the water company to redraw that map. So that original map that we were considering at the January 28th meeting has been modified, and I have it in the next slide. I have a copy of what it looks like now. Well, let's just go to that. So here is that revised map, the red line, and just to get you oriented, the city of Atascadero is down here in the lower left corner, the brown tan area, and the Salinas River is right in through here. So this red line now is the modified and revised boundary line. And again, the water company actually had an engineer retained that helped Prague's and Pro Water Equity to make sure that line was drawn as closely as we can determine to follow that Rinconada Fault. And so they moved, you know, down along where the fault line is and followed existing property lines to better define, you know, where that boundary should be. So there is a legal description that was also submitted with this red line and this new boundary, and that will be now become part of their application for moving forward with the formation of this water district. So I think, you know, Prague's and Pro Water Equity have listened to both the water company and the city of Atascadero. They're trying to eliminate opposition to their formation of this, so they don't want a bunch of unhappy, you know, participants being pulled into this. I think they agree with our rationale and the water company's rationale why we should be excluded, and they've responded. So I think that shows a good faith effort on their part to take what the city and the water company have said and to revise their plan. So tonight, one of the questions to be asked is if you want to revise your position or potentially revise the language of the resolution. And I think there has been some talk about maybe fine-tuning that a little bit. But our conclusion from a staff standpoint is we've reviewed the map, we've talked to the water company, and feel that line is now a reasonable representation of where that fault line is. And as far as alternatives, we can modify the language in the resolution. You could refer this back to staff for additional analysis to bring back to you at a later date, or just decide not to take any action.
Thank you. We do have some questions coming. First, it looks like we may have the items moved around. That's okay. We're going to go with Councilman Sturdivant because I know Councilman Kelly didn't push his button. So,
yes, Russ, in your report, you just mentioned that there was a well from Paso Robles in the northern part of our sub-basin. Is that correct? And how does that
yes.
play into this?
So let me get back. I guess this is probably the best map. So one of the city of Paso Robles has what they call their Thunderbird Well, which is up near the interchange of Highway 41 West and 101. They have one of their main wells. They have water, an allocation from the state to take water out of the Salinas River, and that's at their Thunderbird Well in that location. And that is technically in the Atascadero sub-basin. That's in the very northernmost tip of it, but that's where the Rinconada Fault comes, you know, across the river there. and their well is just south of that. So they have a certain allocation of water that they can pump out of the Salinas River from the state, just like the water company and TCSD. They have a specific amount, and that's their location. So it's at the very low end of the groundwater basin, but they are in it.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Fonzie.
Russ, are you aware of whether the boundary that's been now revised follows the assessor parcel numbers?
It follows property lines. So many times, you know, there could be slight differences between, you know, property lines and assessor's parcel lines. Sometimes assessor's parcels might include two or three parcels. Sure. So the intent was, I believe they used the county GIS system that has all the assessor's parcel information in it, and they would use those parcel lines to try to follow where that fault line is. So I believe the answer to your question is yes, it follows the assessor's information.
Well, my concern is if there is a property that straddles the boundary of the Atascadero sub-basin, it would be possible for someone to put a well in the Atascadero sub-basin and the majority would be in the Paso Robles groundwater basin. So what I was thinking we may want to change the language to is that we would exclude those parcels that may straddle the line and put it on the Paso Robles groundwater basin side if there is some kind of a problem with it.
I think I'm sure there are parcels that straddle the line, and the Rinconada Fault may go, you know, bisect a piece of property. I don't know if that groundwater, the edge of that groundwater basin, is that distinct. You know, that a fault line is a bunch of broken up rock, and it could be, you know, 100 feet wide, and there. So it's. I think I see what you're saying. But it's not going to allow somebody to drill a well on the west half of their property and then pump it, you know, four or five parcels away that they don't own. They wouldn't be able to do that. But I'm not sure on that edge there if there is a clean way to define with absolute surety, you know, where that fault line and where those property lines are. I think they've used geologic maps and locations where they've actually located the fault, mm-hmm. and used that as best they can.
Right. I think I would feel better about this if we excluded those parcels that straddle, just because there could be an abuse of our groundwater basin potentially, that we don't want those on the other side sticking their straw into our groundwater basin and sucking us dry, basically. So I don't know whether that's a big change, and it would have to go back to the Mutual Water Company, perhaps Prags, to exclude those parcels that straddle. Is that a reasonable expectation that we could put that in?
I think if a property owner, say it straddles the fault, and the property owner would have the right to drill a well, you know, and use that water that's under his property for the use and benefit on his property, you know, that's kind of just California groundwater law.
Sure.
So, but as far as taking that water and moving it, you know, half a mile down the road for the use and benefit of somebody else, it's probably something that could be taken care of through the formation of the district and what their rules are. And, you know, there could be a basic rule that if it's.
Well, the only reason I ask it, Russ, is because one of the things that's been brought up about this district is that they may have the chance to do water banking, which would mean importation of water in there for their use, and then perhaps selling or redistributing the water. So my thought is if you could take water from Atascadero and store it there and pump it out to other places, that would be allowable under the proposal that I've seen.
It might be a technical question. It just has to be answered, you know, as the district forms, because I don't know that I have that answer for you. But my understanding of the groundwater formation is that as you get close to that fault, that, you know, most of the water really is in the Salinas, you know, River and closer to the Salinas River. And as you get out to the extremity of the groundwater basin, there's less depth there, less water.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I had a discussion on that very topic with John Neal of the Water Company, and of course he's listened to this debate. He's heard the discussion about water banking. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the terms and defining the terms. He's proposed some alternate language that folks are considering that I think would help clarify that more. For me, the key point is the Water Company, who is the experts in this area and have been good stewards of our area, have come with a... They drew the map. They drew the lines and are comfortable that protects our water district. So that means a lot to me anyway. And if they can continue to work on language that clarifies that more, that's good too. But I assume that the way the resolution we have... you've reviewed with the water company staff, and they are comfortable with our language, that this would not harm our water district in any way.
Yeah, I think the language in the resolution was to first and foremost follow, you know, your direction at your last meeting. I think their support, you know, when John was here, was they do support the formation of the water district. And they absolutely support elimination of those parcels that overlie the groundwater mm-hmm. subbasin. So I think this resolution is consistent with their approvals too.
Right, and what we're doing is a subset of their conclusions. We are not yes. taking a position on the formation of a water district that's out of our area.
Correct.
Our concern was that we protect our geologic formation and the water company is comfortable with the language we have for supporting them on protection of our water subbasin.
Yeah, I did not forward that resolution to John Neal at the water company, so I don't know if he's seen it or not. But I know we've had discussions about the issues involved here.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Let's open it up to the public if anyone would like to speak on this topic. Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the council for further questions or deliberation. We could entertain a motion.
Make a motion that we recommend that the council approve draft resolution stating that the City of Atascadero opposes the inclusion of properties overlying the Atascadero subbasin from the boundaries of a regulatory water district for the Paso Robles groundwater basin.
Question? A clarifying question?
Well, do we have a second first? If not...
I'm happy to second it.
Okay.
I thought there were some proposed changes. We haven't talked about that. Are there none?
Well, if we... Let's hold the motion then, and if you had some questions you wanted
I just thought I had... that staff had possibly indicated there were some... possible wording changes, so everything is as
no,
is
I
in
brought
our staff
that
report.
Up. That's an issue okay. with the water company.
Okay,
may
so it's
help.
The same as what's in our staff report is what we're approving right now.
Correct.
What I put up on the screen, what I had gotten some indication before the meeting that this might better fit what the council desired to approve.
I would certainly be more inclined to support the revised language.
Is that consistent with what has been drawn by the water company? Because the water company did work to define the parcels, and I know that they followed the parcels to the best of the ability around the fault line. So is this different than the water company's recommendation?
Well, as I understand it, their consultant and their engineer that determined where that line would be, is he best followed existing property lines that overlied and followed that Rinconada fault as best they could. And so I'm sure there are some parcels that, you know, overlie that mm-hmm. fault line.
We can have some discussion, but what I would like to do is, I think, given that there's such a lot of noise out there with a lot of folks talking about this issue, I think it's important for Atascadero City Council and the water board of our community to be aligned and agree on whatever we're going to support. And I also consider them the experts in this area. If we can't support what they have proposed, then maybe we need to have some more discussion with them. But I think we are running out of time and that there's been a few revisions made, and I don't know how many more revisions are going to be made. But I do know that the group considering the basin basically bowed to the direction of Tascio Mutual Water Company and adopted the map that they drew. And I'm of the opinion that they are working in our community's best interest and know this. And I would think it would be good for us to stay completely aligned and not have any variation between our two organizations on this water issue. Go ahead, Councilman Fonzie.
I think it's always better to be safe rather than sorry. If we can be more specific, I think specificity is always good. I think that the idea of having assessor parcels split is not a sound idea from the point of view of LAFCO. Serving on that board, they do not choose to do that. So if they're going to go down a property line, I'd rather they exclude it from our basin rather than put it in. And I think this is actually a very good revision and would give them direction on that.
Well, we can make an opinion whether it's accepted or not. Councilman Moreno.
To clarify what you just said, Councilmember Fonzie, you said to exclude them from the sub-basin, but you mean to exclude them from the district, the water district.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I wouldn't be opposed to that because this is just us simply saying we support any effort to do this, and I don't think that's necessarily counter to what the water company has said. Mm-hmm. So I could go this route, and it's, you know, no more, you know, work on any end. It's just us being a little more conservative with our recommendations. So I could be okay with that.
Well, I would prefer to go with the water company's recommendation because then we'll have the two entities representing Atascadero in agreement, and I think that would have more attention from all of the folks working on this. If we don't, we just may have one more voice out there when a lot of voices offering their opinions on this topic, it may or may not be considered. Now, LAFCO, as you as sitting as chair of LAFCO, you may take a different track. That's a different issue. But for a city of Atascadero, we just have to represent what we think is best for our community. And one thing I think is best is that we are aligned with the water company. We have a number of folks lighting up, I think, and then they've changed here right before my eyes. Okay, and they are changing again. I've got council. Okay. Let's see if I can figure it. Well, Councilman Kelly is very persistent from far away. I think we're going to go with Councilman Fonzie, then Councilman Sturdivant.
Thank you. I think that we could easily support the concept proposed by the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, and this could go on to LAFCO, as you said, and be decided at that point in time. However, using your logic, Tom, what you're saying is we want to follow lockstep with the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, and they are supporting the formation of the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin District. I do not, as a council member, feel that I have received enough information or I am in any way, shape, or form ready to vote or support that at this time. So I think your logic is faulty, I'm sorry to say. But I could support this as it is. I would prefer it with the language about the assessor's parcels numbers so that we could be specifically stating this for LAFCO's benefit and for the benefit of PRAG if they choose to redraw.
Well, let me reaffirm my logic in that we've got two issues. I think where I'm following the water company's recommendation, two parts, is where they've got a recommendation about groundwater and managing water under the ground that has some geological issues our city engineer pointed out. And I would probably lockstep agree with the engineers that figured that out. Their recommendation about politics, on the other hand, of whether we should support another district or not, is a realm we understand more, and we have chosen not to enter in on that recommendation. But on the, I do agree that I think I would stick with the water company's assessment on the geology, just because I think we should be making sure we're together. And if we're not prepared to say we're aligned with them yet, we need to take more time. The more we delay, the less our input we'll have in the discussion, because folks are moving ahead. You'll have another shot when you're sitting down there at LAFCO. That's a different issue you'll be considering at that time.
I do believe it's important for Atascadero to weigh in on the exclusion of Atascadero Subbasin from the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin District. If we can't do this together, maybe we need to just take that portion of it and vote yes. However, I would prefer to see the language changed. Rather than delay it, I don't know whether we want to take a vote on it with it as is, and then if that doesn't fly, move on to the revision. Your call as mayor.
Well, I only have to wait for whoever makes a motion. So, Brian, you're standing with your original motion. Is there a... Well, we held it at bay. He's restating his first motion. Is there a second? You had a question. I think it's been answered, unless you have another question. Okay, I'll second the motion on the floor. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
No.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Servant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
3-1, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda, again, our city engineer on a road report.
Again, give me a second to get this booted up. Okay, Mayor and Council, tonight we're going to give you a little brief overview of some of the material we talked about at strategic planning, and some of it has been expanded a little bit, just regarding pavement and the condition of roads and other infrastructure here in town. And so tonight, one, we're going to kind of do a brief overview of Atascadero roads, how many of them we have, and the conditions and challenges we have. We're going to talk about pavement design, just how different roads in town are designed as far as pavement thickness and structural section for the different street classifications, and some of the construction cost involved with building roads here in town. And then talk a little bit, too, about pavement condition and how we go about in our road program fixing pavement problems. And with an emphasis on pavement preservation, we'll get into why pavement preservation is so important, and just some of the things what we are doing and what we can do in the future. So we'll start with just Atascadero roads and talk a little bit about what we have here in town. So the total amount of roads we have within the city limits is 169 miles of road. Now that's equivalent, if you drew a line on Google Earth between Highway 41 and 101 to the middle of LAX in Los Angeles, that's 169 miles as the crow flies. So that's how many roads that we have here in town. And of those 169 miles, 139 miles are city maintained. So some of those, the larger roads such as El Camino and Morro Road, which is a Caltrans road, traffic way, some of those are arterial and minor arterial roads, and collectors are some of the other large roads in town. We have 62 miles of those roads in town. And then the little neighborhood local streets, we have 77 miles of city-maintained roads. So it's a huge amount of asphalt and concrete and infrastructure to maintain, and it certainly is a challenge. So also in town, there's a number of both new subdivisions and older roads that are not city maintained. So early on, when the city was incorporated, they agreed to accept some roads, and some roads that were in really poor condition were not accepted for maintenance. And so those have been continue to be owned by those property owners that front those streets. So of those the different types of roads, like I said earlier, the arterials are the largest roads, like El Camino, that move large amounts of traffic and truck traffic. And the collector is road is really just connecting those local subdivision streets to those arterials. Santa Lucia, Santa Rosa, and Dolores would be examples of collector streets. And then the local roads are just, you know, the smaller subdivision streets that serve neighborhoods. So in this graphic here, it gives an indication of the different types of roads. The red or the red lines in this drawing represent streets that are maintained within the city, and those gray lines are non-city maintained roads. So that gives you an indication of you know, where some of those areas are that are maintained and non-city maintained. And then this graphic too is a different classifications of the roads, where the red and green colored roads are the principal and minor arterial roads, and the purple or violet colored are the collector roads, and then everything else, the gray, would be a local street. So as far as we'll start at some of the basics on pavement design, and we'll start with this pavement and truck traffic. So this I like this graphic because it was prepared by Ashto, and it uses an S10 Blazer, which is the old original SUV. But if an S10 Blazer, one trip, you know, going down the street, is one unit in this graphic, then a two-axle, like a small moving van, would represent 442 times more load and impact on the roads than one, you know, small, you know, residential vehicle. And a garbage truck, you know, and it's really the difference of these larger vehicles, whether it's a garbage truck or a 10-wheel truck and trailer full of asphalt or gravel or heavily loaded, might have 40,000 pounds per axle, you know, on a heavily loaded truck, where a small passenger vehicle may be, you know, a couple thousand pounds. And so this graphic just indicates that truck traffic really has an impact, and heavy vehicles have a huge impact on the condition of your roads and the design of the roads. So there's really two fundamental factors when it comes to how thick that asphalt and aggregate base, the gravel that's below the asphalt, how thick that should be. It's commonly referred to in the Caltrans design world as a structural section. And there's two components that you need. There's a traffic index, which it's higher for an arterial street and lower for a local street. And then you have, and this goes into a formula in the Caltrans design manual, and then you do soil samples to test that type of soil that's under the road, and you get what's called an R value. And so where a clay, which is a really poor material to build a road on top of, would have a really low R value, something that was real sandy and gravelly would have a very high R value. Somewhere between, usually around here, the lowest you see is about a 5 for really clay soils. And then, you know, very sandy soils towards the river might be somewhere between, I would say they're probably around 45 or 50. So an example of how, when you take into consideration the type of road it is, the type of truck traffic you're going to have, and the type of soils conditions you have, I've put this slide on here to give you an example of a typical soil in Atascadero. It might have an R value of 15. And if that, for an arterial street, when you do the calculations, the arterial street would need to have 4 inches of asphalt over the top of 16.5 inches of road gravel. And that would cost today, if we were going to go out and build a road, that would, just for the paving and aggregate base, that would cost us about $7 a square foot at prevailing wage. A collector road, again, the same soil conditions, just lighter traffic. You come up with a thinner asphalt layer, less depth of gravel, and it drops it down to about $6 a square foot. And then a local subdivision street, you might have 2 2¾ inches of asphalt and 8.5 inches of base at $4 a square foot. So that gives you an idea of, just depending on the type of traffic, for the same soils conditions, how it can affect the cost of installing or maintaining that road. So we'll talk a little bit about pavement distress and how we fix those things. Pavement deterioration comes from, you know, two factors. One is just being exposed to the elements, the sun, the rain, break down the asphalt and break down the surface of the road so it slowly deteriorates over time, even if you had no vehicles on it. And then certainly the traffic loading and the amount of trucks and heavy loads that roll over that pavement to produce deterioration in the road. So often we see these different types of distress. You know, the one on the left is what we call weathering, where just the fine aggregate surface wears away. Usually it's caused by years and years of sun damage and then rain washing those fine little sand particles off. And so the road becomes very noisy, and it's called weathered. It may not have a lot of cracks in it, but it's when it starts weathering like that, the serious problems start setting in. And across from left to right, you have transverse cracking. Again, that's mainly due to we get a lot of hot and cold here, and so the pavement expands and contracts with the temperature, and that can cause these transverse cracks and block cracking. And then the worst, and we have plenty of these streets out there, is what's commonly referred to as alligator cracking, and for obvious reasons. It's just that's where you have groundwater or surface water has gotten underneath the asphalt and into the road base, and as that soil underneath the paving gets soft, as heavy trucks roll over it, it flexes and it cracks and breaks. It just fatigues and breaks. And so water getting under old pavement, so once it starts cracking and water gets down in those cracks, it starts deteriorating really fast. And that's why we try to have an active crack fill program. You'll see us out there a couple times a year, stripe, putting that black goo, you know, in all the cracks in the road. Well, while it doesn't look great, it's really important to help save the condition of the road. So when it comes to trying to fix some of these problems, clearly pavement preservation is key to maintaining the roads that you have. And depending on the condition of the road, so up in the upper right, you have a road in really good condition. The appropriate fix for a street like that, if it was time and you had the funding, you would just do a seal coat, just an asphalt emulsion, no aggregate. You would just get some asphalt emulsion over the top of that. It helps prevent that weathering from getting any worse. That would be a road in good condition. Fair condition would be like what we did on El Camino, where you have some cracks, but the road structurally is in good condition. You would do a crack fill, and then like we did, microsurface, which is asphalt emulsion and some aggregate. And then as you go down, poor condition, that would be, probably like Santa Rosa Road. Was when we did that a few years back. It was in pretty rough condition. We had to use some fabric and dig out some problem areas. And then, of course, the worst case down at the bottom is a failed road where it is completely alligatored. The only solution to that is you have to dig it out. You have to remove the paving, remove the base, go down until you get solid down into solid soil, and start from the bottom and work your way back up, and it's very expensive. So these are some of the costs that we have seen over the past 5 years as far as what it takes to address street problems. So the microsurface on El Camino that we did and around City Hall here, that's about This is an all-in price. So that's your engineering, your testing, inspection, restriping. That's your final cost for the project. It comes out about 45 cents a square foot. And then Cape Seal, which is like what the county did in Templeton. It's more of a chip seal with a black coating over the top. That runs about $1.75 a square foot. A thin overlay, again, that's similar to what we did on San Fernando about a year ago. We just did a good two and a half or two and three quarter inch overlay on San Fernando. That's $4 a square foot. So you can see where it gets pretty pricey pretty quick. In the worst case, on those reconstruction type projects, they can be upwards of $12 a square foot. So you can see as the condition of the pavement gets worse and worse, you know, the fix gets more and more expensive. So this is the tried and true, you know, pavement preservation diagram that any pavement preservation or road maintenance program is going to be based on this concept. And on the y-axis, you have the pavement condition. So up at the top of that, you have excellent. As you work your way down to very poor. And then along the x-axis, along the bottom there, you have just the year in time, or the time in years of the pavement life. So it starts out, and this curve is just the condition of the asphalt over time. So it starts off at year zero as brand new and excellent condition. And as it goes out to 15 years on this chart, you see that about 75% of that asphalt's useful life. And then it starts, you know, as the slope of that line starts heading down, it, you know, pretty quickly out there between 20 and 25 years, typically, you know, asphalt is completely, I mean, it's ready to be pulled up and repaved. So this chart would show that that first hand pointing at the condition of the road graph or line shows that spending a dollar on pavement preservation before that point saves you from spending, it eliminates or delays spending of $6 to $14 on rehabilitation or reconstruction at the second or lower hand point where it's pointing at. So that the theory is you don't necessarily want to wait and put all your money in towards fixing the worst roads. I mean, there are some bad condition roads out there, and you could spend a lot of your money in your road program trying to fix the worst roads in town. But it, and there, I'll show another graph in here. You're actually money ahead by taking care of the pavement that you have that's in fairly good condition, is investing in that to make sure it stays in good condition, because it's so much cheaper to maintain that pavement. And that's where this graphic comes from. And it might be a little hard to read, but the top, it asks that worst first condition. Do you maintain those roads and spend a bunch of money on those roads that are in really bad shape? The first, you're going to have to overlay it. And then you continue every 6 or 8 years, you do some kind of a slurry seal. That results in over 30 years, $2.38 a square foot, for instance. Whereas on the bottom, it's a different theory where you would say, I'm going to let my roads deteriorate until they're in rough condition and they need an overlay. So forget the pavement maintenance or the slurry seals, the chip seals, all the cheaper products. We're going to just wait longer and spend more money to fix them when they're in bad condition. So on that graph, this would be an overlay every 10 or 15 years, which, you know, is better than what we can do. Over 26 years, you've spent $3.89 a square foot. Over the long term, it's just not a good plan, because you're spending a lot more money less frequently, but it ends up costing you more. So this, I wanted to try to give you an idea of the order of magnitude on what it is to maintain all the roads that we have, the city maintained roads. So if we were going to go out, we had, you know, crystal ball, we had all this money to spend, and And we wanted to microsurface what we did on El Camino, microsurface everything we have in town. That would cost $8.5 million to put that thin seal coat on every road that we have. And you'd have to spend $1.4 million a year, every year for 6 years to get through that. It wouldn't address, you know, the structural problems that we have on many roads, but that's just to give you an idea, to make roads black here in town, that's $8.5 million. An upgrade of that would be a cape seal, again, more of a chip seal, an improved chip seal, a little more structural wherewithal and strength added. That's $33 million, and that would be $4.1 million a year. Thin overlay, you can see the numbers get out of hand really fast. And so I'm not advocating this, but just to give you an idea of the order of magnitude of what it is it would to take to do some of this work. So obviously we're not going to overlay every road in town, and that's where we would have a pavement management system where we're addressing, you know, different roads need different fixes. And some, you know, grants and project money that we get from time to time, and that's we slowly are slipping. We're losing the battle because there's just not enough money being isn't available to invest to maintain or improve our road condition overall. There is, we've talked about sales tax measures might be an option for the city, and it might. Could generate, you know, just in rough estimates, $1.5 million to $2 million a year. And again, we, Atascadero is the only incorporated city now in San Luis Obispo County that does not have a half cent sales tax measure. So we're at 7.5% sales tax. Every other incorporated city is at 8%. And Paso Robles being the most recent one where they just, in this last election, passed their sales tax measure, and now they're frees up money to invest back into their road system and other infrastructure. And as far as future funding sources, we don't know. I mean, it's changing, but I think trying to do as much as you can, you know, as far as like a sales tax measure and just being strategic and wise about spending the money is probably a good place to start. So it's not to say that the roads are the only problems we have. You know, there's storm drains. You know, every road has culverts underneath it, and we have a lot of we finished about a year and a half ago a complete inventory of all the storm drains that we have in town, kind of assessed their condition, sized up what size pipes and materials, and there is a lot of corrugated metal pipe, you know, underneath our roads, which was pretty much the predominant pipe material that was used for road drainage, you know, 30 years ago. Everybody was installing corrugated metal. Well, that, just like any metal, it rusts and gives out. And we've found some alarming conditions that we got on immediately when we ran some cameras down certain pipes, and it needs some attention. So that's going to be put back into or emphasized in our upcoming capital improvement planning is to take a hard look at some of those critical storm drains and try to stay ahead of that. Parks equipment, it's a struggle. You know, parks equipment is very expensive. We've kind of borrowed and moved slides from, you know, here's a slide at Fire Station 1. Again, not that the roads and storm drains are the only thing, but there's lots of places out there where, you know, we have buildings and other facilities that, you know, over time we're doing the best we can to try to stay up with the different problems and patching them together. So I didn't want to end on a down note. I think we've done good. My opinion is that with the resources that we have, I think we've done as much as we possibly can as being wise and being going out and getting, you know, slow cog money that helps for projects and, you know, stretching those dollars as far as we can to help preserve the roads. But it's a tough it's a tough undertaking with the limited resources we have. I think with that, that concludes it. I just wanted to, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. And I think we agree. I think our staff has done an outstanding job with the hand we're dealt. We keep voting for road money at federal and state level, and somehow it gets diverted before it gets to us, which is very disheartening statewide. But I do think you have done a very good job managing what we have. We do have some questions. First, Councilwoman Fonzie, then Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
Thank you. Excellent report, Russ. Very informative. Approximately how much do we spend per year on roads?
You know, it varies. Lately, we've done pretty well at SLOCOG, and we've got the different funding sources. Like Mayor O'Malley said, they are drying up. I want to say we're probably spending $1 million ballpark, probably averaging $1 million a year. You know.
Okay. Thank you.
$750,000 to $1 million a year.
And that's primarily funding that we're getting from other agencies like SLOCOG. As far as self-generated money, we have budgeted out of funds that we actually have control over and not dependent upon asking other people. That number is more like $250,000 or less.
As far as like general funds,
yes.
Money, yeah, and Rochelle may be better, or Jerry might be a better source, but that sounds about right.
From general fund money right now, we have $0 going to projects. We do $200,000 to $400,000 a year from that.
Thank you. And that's where with our potential consolidation and savings, there may be a little more money that can go towards roads for a short period. So we have, is that your questions, Councilman Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant and Councilwoman Moreno?
Well, thank you for raising my awareness on the trucks and those kind of things, what they do to a road. I didn't realize that. That was quite an eye-opener for me. So, you know, you had mentioned that we are spending money on roads right now. I was wondering, is our mindset of what you were speaking about doing, taking care of the ones that are in best shape now, is that how we're tackling what we are doing with the money we're spending now?
I think El Camino would be an example of that. You know, we had that money that didn't say we had to do pavement preservation with it, but we wanted to use it for that purpose on El Camino. To answer your question, we are focusing on pavement preservation, but at the same time trying to balance that. There are roads that need overlays. You know, San Fernando Road was in really rough condition, and we did overlay that. Atascadero Avenue, we did the cold in place recycling project. That was a fairly major reconstruction, but that was a road that hadn't been touched probably long before the city was incorporated. I mean, that road's probably 40 years of not having much, if anything, done to it. And so that would be an example of a fairly large reconstruction type project.
So the plan is already in place for that type of an attack on our roads. In other words, trying to going in a methodical manner to get them in shape and that kind of stuff. So all we need is more. We need just more resources to be able to do more.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Thank you,
Councilwoman Moreno.
Thank you, Russ. Very good report. So if you're saying we're spending maybe $750,000 to $1 million a year. And then, Rochelle, you had said something about $200,000 to $400,000 a year is coming from, is that the local transportation funds? And is that part of that $750,000 to $1 million?
That is part of it. The remainder is grants and other things. And it does vary from year to year because a lot of times we will save up money so that we can do a larger project, or we may get a large grant in 1 year and spend $2 million, and the next year very little. Again, because of timing of the grants and other things.
Okay. And then I think what we had said is the gas tax seems to...
opinions as to why the cities are receiving less, but we are.
Okay. Thank you.
No other council questions. So, again, this is going to be a receive and file. We will go to public comment in just a moment, but we won't be taking any action tonight. We want to hear any input. We may have some more discussion, but we won't have a... direction particularly. I'll open up to public. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is John Elias Dennis. I live near Atascadero Lake Park. I actually came here because I thought my item was on the agenda to hear a presentation about the path that's proposed from San Gabriel Road to Portola Road. I think it's something like $600,000 you're thinking of spending. You approved it, apparently. And I would like to know what you're paving that trail with.
Well, go ahead and finish your any questions you have.
That's it. I'd like to know what material you're planning to pave that with, because I did a survey at Lake Park where the Lake Park users on a Saturday morning filled out cards. I have them to give to you on what surface they would prefer to walk on, and it wasn't paved was the question that I asked the people that were walking around, because that was what was in the council, the packet. It said paved, and what does that mean to people? What does it mean to you? So I asked people, what do you want to see it paved with? And I gave it to Marcia Torgerson, hopefully she circulated that to you. But if you've already awarded this, what is it being done in? Apparently we don't have a choice. I haven't seen the project, so I don't know. I thought I would hear Warren do a wonderful display tonight. And here we are. We're still on pavements. I figured I was still on topic. So what are we paving it with?
Well, that would have been a great community forum question, but it kind of fits here. This isn't on this topic, but we will address that. Do you have any other questions?
That was it.
Okay, thank you. Any other member of the public have questions on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the council. I think we can address that question probably under committee reports or something. We'll come back to that. But let's conclude with this item. Any comments council would like to make on this item? Now, we thank you for that report. Again, I know the number one concern in our community, probably because we don't really have a solution. Talk about an unfunded mandate. We don't really have a way to deal with that. We're conscious of that. I think our council's taking the approach of, we just got to work harder of raising more money, because like I always say, everything I want to do costs money, and that's, I think, why we focus on economic development. But we understand some of these needs, and where so many of them, at least we have a plan. We are still working on this one. So thank you for that report and doing what you can with what you got. I think we can move on to council announcements and reports, and I'll address your question under slow cog. So let's go ahead and thank you. I see your light from Councilman Fonzie, and you've got some good news to report of some of your activities. Go ahead.
Thank you. I've been in touch with some people that are in charge of the Purple Heart Trail, and they're working with Kacho Ashajian regarding AB 2498, and it would be a bill that would support putting signage up in Atascadero particularly, but other places along the Purple Heart Trail, for instance, the Estrella Warbirds. There's a veterans memorial in San Luis Obispo, and this would put specific signs underneath the Purple Heart Trail sign that would say, Faces of Freedom Memorial, turn here. And so I was wondering if the council would be willing to support writing a letter of support to Kacho regarding AB 2498, asking him to support this bill.
And let me check with our city attorney. I think we could do that by consensus on such an item.
Is this a time-sensitive matter that can't wait to your next meeting?
It is, actually.
And you're asking the mayor to write a letter?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Well, as long as you're not directing him to do that, you're requesting him to write the letter, then you're not taking action, and it would be within the discretion of the mayor to do that if he chose to do so.
This would be a request. Thank you.
Right. Well, I try to always honor my requests. So if I would ask a staff to work with, say, Councilwoman Fonzie on drafting a letter.
We can do that and get it for your signature.
Yeah. And I can represent that, you know, it was brought up and I heard consensus on that. Thank you. Any other committee reports, any other council announcements before we go to committee reports? I'll go ahead and start with the, we haven't had a city schools committee meeting in a while, believe it or not, was water. And we had, of course, Senator Monning there, as well as our Assemblyman Kachu Ashajian, and we did, I think they made it very clear, they aren't going to take a position on any issues in our area without really hearing from elected officials. They really want us, all of us, to basically take whatever position we're going to take, and that is going to mean a lot to them. So I think that's why it's important that we kind of offer an opinion, and I think we all have opportunities to talk with them. I know especially Kacho is interested in hearing from everyone on that topic, and so is Senator Monning. The next item is Integrated Waste Management Authority. I sit as the chair of that board, and we will have an executive committee meeting tomorrow with a meeting coming up after that. We were going to be actually talking about plastic bags once again. Supervisor Arnold wanted us to have that discussion, as there are some compostable bags that are something that is being considered more and more. We will probably delay that, as she's going to have to miss a meeting. So if you've heard us talk about it and then it's not on the next agenda, it's at Supervisor Arnold's request. However, in any case, the state of California is going to put in the super bag ordinance, which will supersede everything, and so suck it up. You're not going to see plastic bags in the state of California. But I think there are some options with the compostable bags. There are a lot of alternatives now being considered, and I think we'll be seeing those coming our way at some future time. The San Luis Council of Governments, I do sit on that board, and as Russ said, we've done very well for a number of years. When I first got on, we were fortunate to get, of course, the Highway 41-101. Of course, everybody kind of keeps track and considered we got our $23 million there, and fortunately, we also got quite a bit of work done on El Camino, as well as the traffic way, and of course, our Lewis Avenue Bridge. There are so many things that were funded. We were very fortunate the last few years, but it is very much slowing down, and I know that the biggest discussion at SLOCOG is about talking about the formulas for how funds will be distributed between the cities in the future. Much of these federal and state funds come to the Council of Governments that then get sent out to the jurisdictions, our cities, based on criteria much like we rank roads, needs, dealing with say that. It hasn't hurt us to date, but all of the funding criteria in the future is going to be what mechanisms you have in place to kind of help take care of some of these items yourself, which you can debate is life fair or not, but that is going to be the criteria, and so we're going to be in a position of being less competitive in the future. So that's, I'm sure, something we'll be talking about. San Luis Council of Governments feels like they're not as competitive statewide with other COGs, similar issue, and so they're probably going to be looking at a sales tax initiative themselves in 2016. And so then that'll just add to the confusion on the ballot of more organizations asking for funds. However, any survey I've seen, there's usually pretty good support if there is any increase of, again, voter-approved funds from taxes or anything else. If it's going specifically to something folks want, like roads, folks have usually been supportive. But let me be clear, we don't decide whether we're going to just raise taxes. That's not in our jurisdiction. We are just lamenting that we're in a situation where, you know, we're not going to be as competitive as other areas, and it's something we'll be talking about in the future, I'm sure, what we could do. However, we did get some luck with some grants recently for some pathways. I'm going to let our city manager respond to that, but I do want to thank our own Ron DeCarli, who is the chief executive officer with SLOCOG. I've been lobbying for trying to do more on the pathways around. We started with Safe Routes to School around Santa Rosa and San Gabriel. We had kind of a log jam right around the intersection of Portola and 41 to get across over to the Veterans Memorial. And we really wanted to tie that Lake Park Zoo Memorial into any other of our potential pathways, and there was a lot of challenges with Caltrans for some time. They did not want to give up some of the right-of-way, and we had some issues. But just recently, there's been some breakthrough and also some funding, and I hear we're making some progress. Could you kind of give an idea of where we are and what we could expect?
Sure, you bet. To answer John Lee's question, the money for the multi-purpose pathway was regional STIP money, and it's trans, and there's some challenges out there. We ended up flipping that pathway from the zoo side of the road to the creek side of the road because there was less conflicts from a Caltrans standpoint. So it's going to become a multi-purpose bike path, pedestrian path. It'll be a paved surface, whether it's concrete or asphalt, but it will be a two-way, kind of a Bob Jones trail, kind of a pathway from San Gabriel to Portola, and we're going to solve some of those access issues there in front of the Mexican restaurant at Portola and Morrill Road, and we've met with that property owner. So,
excuse me, we won't have a, I'll open up, yeah, well, if you want to submit those to the sure. City clerk, that would be fine.
And the other, what Mayor O'Malley referred to is we also got some funding for that. The 41 corridor has been kind of, for a long time, been a lot of questions of whether that road needs to be, you know, five lanes with parking on both sides, just this 100-foot wide strip of asphalt and concrete. And so we had applied for some planning grant money to take a look, and this again had real good support at SLOCOG to look at that segment from Highway 101 to San Gabriel Road. And so we did receive a grant to fund a planning study that will look to see if there's opportunities to narrow it down, to do more streetscape type elements to help make it a little more attractive. There's also some stormwater issues that we could look at. Might be a potential corridor for mitigation programs for drainage in the area. And so the idea is, or the questions are, can we narrow it down? And in those sections where it can be narrowed down, what are some of the design elements that the public would want to see? And so it's going to be a very interactive process with several workshops. The public will be invited, and the property owners and business owners along that corridor will be heavily involved and invited to come in and participate as that vision. It's really just to try to, you know, help formulate a vision with the council, and you certainly planning commission and council will be involved in this process too. It, you know, with Caltrans, it takes time. And so this is a planning level study to start looking at that corridor to see if something's possible out there.
And I think, as I had mentioned before, one is a road to the coast. And with that, though, there are some challenges because I think one reason we're competitive is we have the intersection of two state highways, 101 and 41, and we're also along a creek. That's three big ticket items that I think it would make it a higher priority to Caltrans, but then there's also so many requirements related to that. Anytime you're doing something close to a creek and a state highway, and the safety issues of having pedestrians, bicycles, dogs, you name it, we want to accommodate everyone, but in accommodating everyone, you've got some more restrictions requirements. So they will do an extensive public process on expanding along 41, anything we're able to do, but there are a number of restrictions that'll make it not just necessarily a DG pathway that we are used to. And I don't know if you can, now the section I think that was raised at public comment, do we know? We don't know. It could be concrete, it could be pavement as far as the basically a two-way bike lane that can also be pedestrian, and it'll be separated from the freeway. I imagine there's going to be a landscape buffer of some sort.
Yeah, there is an existing gravel pathway, the RCD trail, yeah, that goes through there. So it's kind of the next level of improvement, yeah, above and beyond that. But certainly concrete, if we could afford it, is much, much lower in maintenance cost. And so, you know, as we add facilities, we try to make them as bulletproof as we can so we don't have, you know, we don't have 5 or 6 years from now, we don't have to go in and overlay the asphalt. So
right.
The concrete, if we can afford it, would be a better option from staff's point of view. Because it would be, and we could, you know, look at colored concrete. We would probably wouldn't just put plain concrete out there.
Well, I think other issues to consider, again, I know we all have things that we like to do and sometimes think, you know, I like walking on DG, but we are accommodating everybody in our community. A very high priority is ADA accessibility and making sure that things are wheelchair accessible. It's becoming a very big topic statewide about even getting into some lawsuit issues. So some of the things we do are going to have a lot of design requirements. And I think it's a good thing that we rate so high when you look at the variables we have in this particular area, and it happens to be...
Thank you. I wanted to report on the Oversight Board, which met yesterday, and they're deciding on the disposal of our Creekside building, the old Main Street building across the street from us. Will be torn down. Other signs and easements will be accepted and at no cost to the city from the redevelopment agency, although they were purchased with redevelopment funds. So we'll be coming back in April to discuss the final disposition of our major asset, which is the Creekside building, our old city hall.
Any ideas what that might be, or we're just too early to say?
I think a decision will be made probably to put it on the market.
Okay.
And secondly, I did want to report in on the last LAFCO meeting. A lot of talk about the formation of the groundwater district in Paso Robles area. And the next step, just so you will be aware, is the legislative update. This will be something carried forward by CACHO to change the actual management structure, the elected board for that district, so that it takes in elected small property owners, medium property owners, and large property owners. That's not the way that type of district normally does it. They usually base it on acreage. So this is the thought behind it is to be more representative of those who are on smaller parcels as well as those on large. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Moreno.
No report.
And that takes us to any other individual determinations or actions. Any word from staff? Chief Haley, any comments about your dance? Do you think you're going to beat Councilman Moreno this coming couple of weeks?
That's a dangerous proposition you just threw my way. I don't think there are any losers.
He has a gun. Of course he's going to beat me.
Obviously, the money all goes to the library. It's a great cause. It's one that we've been working for in this community for a long time. And like I said, there can't be any losers in that game. We'll both give it our best effort, and we'll let the results speak for themselves.
Well, and appreciate both of you taking your time to help out our friends at the library. Of course, Brian and I did this earlier. I guess that leaves Councilman Fonzie coming up here. We'll look forward to that opportunity. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you. Yeah, we can.